Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 22nd, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, last week it was such an exciting week that I totally forgot to bring up something that I do during tournaments. Actually, it's mostly just in apes, but I wondered if you had something like this. You know how people set goals and things, and and sometimes they write down, you know, what their chip stacks are at every level interval so they can study it later. And I didn't know if you had goals like this. Like when we were playing in that final, I always like to check off stages that I've cleared or whatever and then compare them with how I did the last time. I mean, I don't physically write them down. I just, it's like a mental note. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, am I the first one out? No. Okay, I cleared that level. That's good, because that's really embarrassing for the show. If I go out first, they're going to rag on me for months
particularly
to come.
In the limit tournament.
Yeah, exactly. So, check. I didn't have to worry about that one. And then, did I outlast you? That was one of the things I always wondered. Did I outlast you so I can rib you, or you're going to rib me, and I have to prepare for that either way?
Right.
And then, do I outlast the home game guys from our home game regulars? Okay, this last time I did, so that was check. Did I make the final table? Yes, I did make the final table, check. And am I in the money? And, of course, thanks to a half-assed done deal, I got in the money. And then the last thing is always, did I win? And I've never been able to check off the win one in apes, but I just... It was weird. I was thinking of these levels and stages going through the tournament. I wonder, do you ever think of that, Scott, or are you just playing?
I generally don't. Sorry, man.
I was just curious, because a lot of people do that. They have, like, goals and things to strive for, things to try to beat and stuff.
Well, I was playing the cash game over in Biloxi earlier this month. There was a guy at the table that had a little tiny diary and wrote down every hand, and this was like a 4-8 limit game, you know?
Yeah.
The woman next to me kind of looked at him, and you know, they started a conversation. He's like, "Yep, I still write it down on paper. I just don't trust those computers." So you know, whatever works for you.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, hey, I'm just I throw it in the wind. I'm just playing. I'm having fun.
And usually I do that, like with you know, if I'm at like a live tournament, brick and mortar kind of thing, then I'm sort of just looking at my stack, saying, "Okay, I have a larger stack than." You know, the average, or I have more than my starting stack, so I'm doing okay. If I was late to the tournament, this is what I'd have anyway, you know, or something of that nature. But when it's apes, I always think, okay, here's all of our friends, and here's you, and there's other stuff riding on it, too. Like, if I ever got knocked out first, I would never hear the end of it on the show. So, you know, I'm trying to avoid these things, you know. And,
probably true, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
it's a good goal to have.
But it's just the anatomy of things, you know, like an anatomy of a sit and go.
Wow.
You like that?
That's the segue of the year.
Thanks, buddy. That's awesome.
Very nice. our good columnist, John Lanier, and I were in the Annie Up team tournament over at Tampa Bay Downs on Tuesday with a couple other friends. And it's going to be a monthly event out there, so if you're in the area, come out and see if Chris goes out first, which I did 2 tournaments ago.
I know.
In that one. So, yeah, I can't check that one off. But anyhow, the team tournament didn't go very well, but after we got knocked out, John and I decided to sit down in a sit-and-go there. And when it got down to four-handed, it just occurred to me that this great case study in sit-and-go management was right there in front of me. And I just thought about it at the time. Obviously, I realized what was going on. But afterwards, I just kept thinking about it. And I'm like, you know what? We got to share this on the show because I don't know whether we've ever done an entire show on sit-and-goes. We maybe have. But obviously, there is a different set of strategy in a sit-and-go than there is in a multi-table. Am I correct?
You are correct. And I'm wondering, too, now, was it at this point that you pulled out your diary because you don't trust them dangle-fangled computers?
And wrote down all the relevant notes?
Exactly.
Yes. No.
That's
no, no. Fortunately, I was I'm blessed with a freakishly huge brain, and I'm able to keep valuable tidbits of information like my name and address, and also a couple of people's stacks in that brain at the same time, and then regurgitate it later. So, you know, it's my cross to bear. all right, but so I want to talk about it here a little bit and get some of your thoughts here, and obviously I'm sure our listeners will let me know their thoughts, which will probably be in conflict with mine. And that's what makes the show great, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we do it.
All right, so here's the situation. It was a nine-handed sit-and-go. Four people remain, top three cash, all right? So we're on the bubble.
Yeah, bubble.
The very important part of the sit-and-go, the bubble.
Yes, right? The part of the tournament that's always been named after you.
Exactly. So you will not be shocked by the next piece of information I'm giving you. I was the short stack with just two big bets left, Chris.
Oh, man.
A normal strategy, you know, get to the bubble and go out, was working like a charm. John was third with squiggly big bets.
Squiggly.
And the other two guys were about even, though obviously one had a little bit more chips than him. All right?
All right.
So that's the situation. Remember, it's nine-handed, so these other stacks are massive. I have – it comes around two big bets. I fold, right? The second chip leader re-raises the chip leader and gets it all in, Chris.
Ooh.
With ace of clubs, queen of clubs.
Oh, no.
All right. And I can't exactly remember what the other guy had, because I don't think it was aces, but it might have been kings.
Uh-huh.
But as soon as the cards were turned over, I was like, are you kidding me? I'm actually going to squeak it in the money with the two big stacks, get it in? And the one has a premium hand, the other one has a nice hand, but not a hand willing to go out early, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
It turns out, that, of course, the shorter of the two stacks went runner-runner flush and went on to win,
or
went on to stay in that. And previous to that, John was in the hand where he got down almost all in, and the chip leader finally had a fold on the river when he missed about 3,000 draws. So I had two pulls at surviving this thing, and it did not work out. And, of course, I ended up going out fourth, and they immediately chopped right after that. Dorks. But but in the first example, I mean, I was looking at it, and I'm like, does this guy not understand how to play a sit-and-go? Or to be able to assess the situation there?
Well, go ahead.
Well, because here's, I guess, is what I'm thinking. When I am the short stack, obviously, I've got to pick a hand and go with it, right?
Yeah.
If you're the chip leader in this situation, you've got some, you want to put pressure on John and I, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't necessarily want to get tangled into a hand with a second player, unless, of course, you have a super premium hand. Generally, you're going to want to avoid, right?
I think so.
Again, obviously, the goal is to win this thing, so I'm not trying to say we don't want to win, but when you're looking at these chip stacks, you can eliminate the other two players pretty quickly. If you are, John, you obviously want me out.
Right.
So, you know, you got to play your hand. So if you get a premium hand, obviously he's going to play. But for the most part, you're going to hope that one of the other two guys knocks me out or that he knocks me out. Even better for him, right?
Right.
All right. Now, if you're the guy with the ace queen in this hand, who is the second in chips, I think your strategy is, again, to pick on the two short stacks, but stay out of the chip leader's way unless you have a premium hand.
Okay.
Until you get to the money.
Okay.
Am I wrong in my on this?
It's not that I think you're wrong, because I don't, but if I didn't argue with you on the show, it would be really sort of a waste of time for us to sit here and agree all the time. So what I'll do is I'll give you two scenarios. One, the guy who was the second short stack was probably the guy I was playing with in Sarasota when he called my all-in raise with a king-queen offsuit, and it cost him his whole stack if he didn't hit. But anyway, I mean, that's what I'm saying there, is maybe he's thinking, ace-queen's a monster hand, and maybe he isn't that good of a player. Maybe he doesn't understand, or maybe he's doing the whole, I came here to win and need a big stack to do it, even though it's not a three-hour, multi-table tournament. Maybe I'm still looking to take first place, and this is ideal because he doesn't respect what the guy who was raising would normally have. Maybe he thinks he was just stealing. And, I totally agree with you, though. You want to be away from the chip leader when you have two such short stacks. But, again, for some people, it's not about getting into the money. It's about winning and only winning. So maybe he didn't respect the guy who raised and thought that he was just trying to steal and played back at him and then got caught but had to commit because of how much money he had out there. I mean, I wasn't there, and I don't know if these guys have a history between each other or if they, during the whole tournament itself, the guy was raising with crap, or I don't know. So, but generally, yeah, your rules are right. I mean, you want to get the short stacks out of the way and only pick on them because you can handle that hit if they happen to call you. Whereas the chip leader, you want to avoid him until you get into the money, and then you want to try to either cut a deal or take him down and get a big chip lead. So, like I said, I wasn't there, so I don't know. But generally, yeah, what you said is right, I think.
Well, I guess the bigger point is that when you're in the short stack, because you see this a lot in tournaments, and mostly multis, but I'm seeing it more in Sit and Goes. I see people when they end up with a short stack, maybe they just got a bad beat on the last hand. The next hand, they just push in. Oh, yeah. I need two cards, right? I've got odds. I've got a chip up.
Yeah.
Well, if you're down to four left, there's a huge difference between chipping up and making it into the money.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily want to push in with anything and just hope. I mean, you got to play the dynamics of the players there. And I'll tell you what I did next that I'm sure you'll disagree with, and most of the listeners will too, but I think it's fairly sound in this situation. After I saw that guy go all in with ace-queen of clubs with the second chip lead and get lucky, I was down to, having to post the big blind with $200 left. All right, so this is a situation in almost every case. You don't even look at your cards. You just put the extra 200 in when it gets around to you, right?
I guess.
You've already got two-thirds of your stack in the pot.
Right.
So in that situation, that particular player raised, signifying that he had some kind of hand. Of course, we're four-handed, so it's different. And it got around to me, and I decided to fold in that situation because he has shown a propensity to be rather reckless. There might be somebody else in the hand after me. I think John had called in that situation. So, maybe John actually has a hand and we'll go in. So I'm going to save the 200 and hope somebody knocks somebody out.
All right.
Where
so
I wouldn't normally do it if I hadn't seen that guy make a reckless play.
You're telling me you only had a $100 chip left because you had $200 invested, two-thirds of your stack?
I think I had 400 in the big blind and I had 200 left.
Okay. And so do you remember what your cards?
Coming. Yeah, they were junk. But again, your junk is kind of what you want in that situation.
Yeah,
I believe it was nine deuce because so I folded, nothing happened, of course. And the next hand, I was in the small blind, and I had to commit with my ace tray offsuit and didn't get there.
Huh?
But it's not the result, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, nine deuce is just a horrible, horrible, horrible hand to.
Particularly when somebody raises people.
Yeah, somebody raises, and you have somebody
he's got a
you.
Pair, then I'm really dead.
Yeah, and you have somebody behind you, too, playing.
Cards. Yeah. Right, got big cards, then I've got I've got live cards at that point. But I, like I said, I wouldn't normally make that move, but I saw this guy do that, so I adjusted my strategy on the fly and still ended up fourth.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could go either way on this because, like you said, you almost proved your point was wrong by saying the guy was reckless. So if he's reckless, he could play any two cards, which means you probably are alive, and you probably are like 60-40, and you're never going to get a better price on your money. You know what I mean? Even if John does come into the hand, now you can triple up and then maybe survive a couple more rounds before John gets knocked out or something, or this reckless guy goes up against the chip leader again. So I don't know. I can see folding, though, because 9-2 is just so horrible, and maybe you'll pick up a big hand. And it turns out you did pick up a pretty big hand four-handed. Ace-3 is probably in the ahead.
Eight tray, sorry.
Oh, eight? You had 8-3 in the next hand?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just shoved it all in with the 9-deuce there.
All right, well, I just thought it was interesting that I don't play a lot of sit-and-goes lately, so that one came up. I thought there were some interesting moves in there. Of course, like I said, the idiot's chopped, so enjoy my money, suckers.
Well, you know, there's one thing that I don't have to worry about chopping or the bubble is I've got this new application for my iPhone, and I thought it was very interesting.
Is it that thing where you can tilt it up and it looks like you're drinking a beer? Because that looks very useful.
Yeah, I had that when I first got the phone, and then I got rid of it realizing I'm a teetotaler, and it would have been just deceiving so many people. So I got rid of that application. But this one is called Poker Bowling, and I thought,
wow. That's perfect for you.
That's perfect for me, right? I bowl, play poker. So it's when you go to the bars and they got the sliding disc, you know, and you throw it at the pins.
Shuffleboard, yeah.
Yeah, and it's got the little like sawdust on the table.
Right, yeah, I love that.
Well, it's that game, except if you get a strike or a spare, you get cards. If you get a spare, they'll give you one card, and if you get a strike, they give you two cards. It's kind of like a poker run, except you're not running. So the funny thing, the only reason why I'm bringing it up is because it's five-card draw. So once you get all five cards, and then, like, say you get another spare or a strike, you get to pick a card or two out and redraw to try to make the best hand possible if you're playing against somebody.
Hmm.
So here's the thing is I don't know if it has an RCG or not. I mean, I really don't know what's going on with this thing. But twice now, I've gotten strikes on the first two frames and gotten four cards and, two for the first frame, two for the second frame. And both of those games, I had an open-ended straight draw. Actually, one time, it was a flush draw. All four were diamonds. And the other one was an open-ended straight draw. So the rest of the way, right, as long as I spared, at least spared, I would be able to have a pull at trying to make a straight 8 outs or a flush 9 outs, right? So both times I spared or struck out the rest of the way, and so that means I had 9 pulls or 8 pulls at trying to make an open-ended straight or a flush, and neither one of the games got there. So I'm wondering,
man,
are those poker odds real? I mean, do we get back into the whole math of poker? You know, you flop a set 1 in 8 times, but it never really feels like that. And I mean, how could I not make a straight or a flush on this damn poker bowling game? It just makes no sense. It's like, come on, what happened to math? What happened to math, Scott?
I haven't used math since senior year in high school, so
that's why we became journalists.
Exactly. Yeah. So I can't really answer that. Sorry.
But I just thought it was fun. It's a fun application for the iPhone and poker and bowling, of course. Hey, my two roundhouses right there, right in the roundhouse there. So, but apparently not that good because I can throw all these strikes and spares, but I can't make a damn hand.
Well, I'll tell you what you are good at, Chris, and you're good at teaching the game to beginners.
Thank you.
And we recently finished up our poker 101 at Derby Lane, and it went well, right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And they've invited us back, so we've got three more coming up, so we'll just quickly mention them. January 28th, which is coming up on Thursday, and February 25th will be ladies-only events.
Right, both those are ladies' events, yep.
Exactly. And then on February 18th, we'll come back and do it for everyone. So if you're in the area, you want to come out and win some raffle prizes and, you know, throw bananas at us or something, that's where you'll find us.
And it's free. It's totally free. And there's free. Actually, like, little appetizer-type food and drinks and stuff. So totally free.
Totally free. And then a couple other things to mention real quick. In Tampa next week, Deep Stacks University is bringing their training course to town, and we'll get more details on that next week when Christina, the president and founder of Deep Stacks, will be on the show, and he's going to bring somebody that an up-and-comer in the poker world, Chris.
Yeah, I think I've heard of this guy.
It's Mike Matisau, I believe is how you pronounce it. they'll be in the studio next week and talking to us about Deep Stacks and their online component and everything like that. And, it's always good to have Mike the Mouth on.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it, too, because, you know, last time we got him when he was just waking up, taking an hour and a half leak, maybe now he'll be in the studio and he'll be like, you know, making fun of the studio, making fun of us. Who knows what he's going to say? And of course, I'm looking forward to the new Deep Stacks training too, because I went to the first one a year and a half ago, and that was in the area, and I had a lot of fun and thought it was good. You know, I covered it for the magazine, so I want to see how it's progressed and how Mattisau is in front of people and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to it, January 30th and 31st. So, and of course, next week's going to be fun in the studio with them. So we'll see what's going on there.
And then just to prove that we don't always do stuff just in Tampa. we'll be up in Jacksonville a couple days after that for the Chad Brown Invitational up at Orange Park Kennel Club. Remember, we're doing the TV analysis there. Good friend Kirk Fowler is coming down. He's talked to him last night. He's flying down. He's actually playing in the event. And they'll be setting up their crew on Saturday and Sunday. And we'll be getting up there on that Sunday, January 31st, and doing some interviews. And then the first, doing the final table.
Yeah, I look forward to a four-hour ride up and a four-hour ride back with you, buddy. It's gonna be, we should bring the recorder.
Always have fun on the road trips.
We should bring a recorder and record our conversations in the car. Maybe we'll use them on the show.
You know, that would have been good on the Faso trip. I was thinking about that. If we could have had like a reader contest where you get to sit in the back seat of our road trip and see the hilarious antics that go on. But
God.
Very interesting. All right.
All right, well, let's take a gander at the Antiup News Desk.
The World Series Poker has issued its player rulebook for this year's series. There are no major changes from last year, aside from allowing texting and Twittering at the table when not in a hand.
I also heard, aren't they having a hygiene thing? I heard about this hygiene thing.
Really?
Now,
that I did not see.
Yeah, there's a hygiene rule now. You have to get yourself some clean, as my partner Scott once said, or you will be fined or something. I don't know what the deal is, but apparently you need to smell pretty decent, otherwise you can't play.
You know, and the other thing that remains from last year is the no more than three logos at a table rule.
Jeez.
And I actually read the entire rule this time and how they decide. You know, if you can't come to an agreement, if there's four Poker Stars players at a table and you can't come to an agreement, you have to draw a high card to find out who has to take their logo off. Just seems kind of silly, doesn't it?
Now, is that for, like, every table or just a final?
I think it's televised table.
Okay, I was going to say, because you can't stop people from just wearing their normal. They got their contracts, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Wow, that sucks. Oh, well, Belgium is seeking to control online gambling in its country by nationalizing it and allowing citizens to only play on site based in Belgium, according to Gambling Online magazine.
Yeah, I guess, you know, this is the way they're getting around the whole European Union regulations on this. If they nationalize it and make it a national thing, then they can prevent you from playing anywhere else. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah. Sounds like bad news for Belgium.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good players at all.
But good news for New Jersey, folks. New Jersey State Senator Raymond Lesniak has introduced a bill that would permit interstate online gambling via Atlantic City casinos, Poker News reports.
Wow. See, that's what I thought was going to happen. I thought that was going to happen everywhere. Was it just going to have all these casinos teaming up with websites or something like that, and then just every state would have their own rules and regulations, you know, and that makes sense to me.
Yeah, the funny thing is, it's almost exactly the same thing as what Belgium is doing.
I know.
So, hey, you're allowed to play as long as you're playing on a New Jersey sanctioned site. So, but of course, you know, we've seen 3,678,000 bills introduced on gambling that never got anywhere. So
that's true.
We will celebrate when it actually gets somewhere.
Okay, well, I hear our hotline ringing. It's 813-448-1120. This comes from Jay Herkey, our longtime listener and friend, and He wants to talk about a lot of things, so let's just hear what he has to say.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Justin from Richmond, Virginia, also known as Jay Herkey on the forums and stuff. Anyway, so I was looking at the website and saw something about Tunica, and it reminded me, I was in Tunica not too long ago, busted out of a tournament, and played some cash games. I played in the, it was a 4-8 limit game, but the blinds were $1 and $2. But to come in, you had to pay $4 and, you know, to raise $8 and stuff. Anyway, I had never really played a game like that before, and I was just curious about y'all's thoughts on it. To me, it let me play a little tighter. I didn't have to see a hand all the time and stuff. But anyway, I just wondering y'all's thoughts on it. I love the podcast and everything. Y'all two are my heroes. P.S. Faso, the whole Southern accent thing, no good, no good. All right, thanks, guys.
All right, first of all, Jay Herkey, you are my hero for Distinct Faso's lame Southern accent. You had no idea how much I had to listen to that the entire trip. he was in character the entire time.
Oh my god!
And he had the audacity to criticize my Southern accent, which you know is about as natural as it gets for somebody born in Ohio.
Oh man.
But the 4-8 limit game with 1-2 blinds, I actually like that game a lot. It's actually, you can find it pretty widely. It just depends on the jurisdiction. In fact, actually, in Mississippi when we went, that was the structure at the Isle Casino, and then everywhere else I played, it was 2-4 mm-hmm. blinds. But I used to love that 1-2 4-8 game up at Mandalay Bay. And used to do really well there. And I guess I'm a little confused, Chris. He mentioned that he was able to play tighter.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing because I don't. If you're gonna play the hand and you're not in the blinds, then you have to come in for the four, right? At least.
No. Is you that... just call the two.
Yeah. Oh, you can just come in for the two.
Right. Yeah. The big blind. It's small blind's $1. $1. Big blind is $2. And that first round, you can call the two.
Oh, you can call the two. Okay. I thought he said if you came into the hand, you had to come up to the four.
Maybe that's a different style. But regardless, I guess that makes it a little different then. But yeah. It doesn't make it much different than a normal game. Then again, I guess other than you just save the money on your blinds.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't play tighter though. If I could come in for $2 and see a flop, I would definitely.
Yeah,
be
exactly.
Looser.
That's what I used to do the Mandalay Bay game. Was I used to play pretty loose pre-flop. I mean, I wasn't going to call a lot of raises, but if I could get in for $2 with the low suited connector and hit something, and then punish people on the next street, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I would do. I mean, I wouldn't tighten up. I mean, unless it was what he said, unless it was what I thought he said. That it was, if you came in, you had to come in for the four, then I would be tighter because, obviously I don't have to play a hand. But yeah, if I can come in for $2, I'm seeing pretty much every flop I can. Right? I mean, 4-8 game and you get to see it for two, that's like a bargain.
Absolutely, half price. It's kind of like buying it off TV.
But you know what? Our analysis of this stuff doesn't matter anyway. The most important part was that he made fun of Faso, so we're happy with the hotline clip regardless.
Yep. And because of that great making fun of Faso, Jay Herkey will be happy to send you an uncut sheet of Jay Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Ante Up. Send us our address, and we will get that off to you. And a couple of folks have already emailed us saying that they got it, and they're excited about it. So nice little addition to the swag shelf.
Awesome.
All right, our mailbag this week. Now, Chris, he went on and gave a very detailed example of what he was saying, but rather than do that, I think we'll just skip right to the heart of the question.
All right.
Keep it open-ended. See what you had to say. Comes from Chris Otwell, and he says, I'm having a problem adjusting my play style to account for position and or knowing when to shove with the idea that my opponents still have some amount of fold equity left and will let their hands go. Any advice to give?
Yeah, I've never figured out what fold equity was, so I'm just going to say no.
Well, I think what he was suggesting is that, if you put the pressure on folks that have a short stack but not short enough that they're desperate enough that they have to call,
right.
That they could still fold comfortably there, and trying to exploit that by raising with less premium cards in order to pick up the blinds in the situation.
I think one of the things you have to try to keep mental notes on are the fact that if you've seen these players lay hands down before in this situation or in that stack size, if you're at the table for a little while with them and they've raised and someone, makes three bets and then they fold, then they know that they're probably thinking that as well, and they have the ability to lay a hand down. So you have to wonder about those things as well. It's not just strictly black and white with the amount of chips he has. But yeah, generally, if you think that your raise would make him commit more than, say, 50% of a stack, or would make him commit most of his stack, then he thinks that he can get away from his hand, and he will. That's the thing. If he's already committed, say, 50% of his stack, or 30% of a stack, it's going to be tough for that person to get away from it, especially if your raise only makes him have to call another 30% of a stack, or whatever. So he's getting great pot odds. So you have to think about a lot of things in that situation. What's in the pot? How much he has left? How much your raise will make him call, that kind of thing. And if it's more than half his stack, then maybe he'll lay it down. But if it's just, if he's getting like 3-1 on his money, he can't lay it down. So you have to be thinking about these things as you're playing.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, we appreciate the email, and everybody else send it to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and you two may make it on the mailbag and win wonderful swag like a deck of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com.
Well, we get to solve a Gene Kelly mystery this week, the case of the Singing in the Rain.
And I love this one.
So I'm going to I'm gonna play the first part, and then we'll react, and then let's see what happens.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, the case of Singing in the Rain. We are playing a 1-2 no-limit cash game on a lazy afternoon.
Lucky for me, I brought a cigar.
Under the gun folds, under the gun plus one folds, and the EP raises it up to 6. I'm on his left, and I look down at ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds. Now, if I was in late position, this might be a good place to just flat, but I decide I'm going to re-raise here and discourage a bunch of position callers. And I give my EP raiser a chance to re-raise me if he has a monster, which would allow me to escape. I make it 14, and it folds back around now to the EP raiser, who calls. The pot is $19, and we see a flop heads up.
It's just business as usual, sir.
Flop comes down, ace of hearts, jack of spades, 10 of clubs, and the EP checks. It's interesting that he checks because he gives me my positional play, and it's a tough one. It's the old cliche, I'm either way ahead or way behind. I don't see a lot of draws here, so I opt to keep the pot small and check behind. Perhaps it will look like a trap. So the turn comes the 8 of clubs, and really, unless he had 9-queen, this changes nothing. And he checks again. Now anytime I get 2 checks, that's a green light, so I'm betting out $15 into the pot of 19. The EP player calls.
What's he thinking?
The river's the 7 of diamonds, and that's really a complete blank. But now, he comes out firing, and bets 44 into the pot of 49. That sends me into the tank. What should we do?
All right, Chris, here's the thing. I normally just immediately just say what I'm going to do, right?
Right.
97% of the time, it's fold. but this time, I think we can actually break this hand, or at least I took the time to break this hand down.
Uh-huh.
I know on the forum people break down every hand, and but this one, I love breaking it down. So here's my analysis, and feel free to mock me as I go along.
Okay, as you go along or at the end?
As I go along.
Okay.
You know, I want to be a little nub of my existing being by the end of my analysis here, as you crush me into oblivion.
Okay.
All right, the preflop raise tells us nothing.
All right, I'm going to cut you off right there.
All right.
All right, the preflop raise tells us something. It tells us that he's in early position and he's raised, so that means that he's probably in his mind thinking he's got a pretty quality hand. So it doesn't tell us nothing. It tells us something.
There's
a mock.
I will mock back that the raise is the $6, which is a standard 3x raise in a tournament, but in a cash game, it's kind of win. All right. Let me get back on track.
All right. Go ahead.
but the fact that he called, I think, eliminates ace-ace or king-king.
Yeah, I don't agree with that either.
Really?
Matter of fact, I think I remember even in our home game, someone once said, I love having aces and having somebody re-raise me, and I just call with it. And then when the flop comes, that's when I hit him with the big bet. So I remember someone specifically saying that in our home game once and using that as a strategy. So I'm not saying that you're right or wrong. I'm saying that someone said that in our home game once, and that's what I'm letting you know. So I'm not mocking you. I'm just saying it doesn't eliminate those hands for me.
All right. I also think the check on the flop tells us nothing, because we took control of the hand.
Yeah, that's true.
But the check on the turn is where we get our first real piece of information. I don't really care what you said. and I think it means either a monster or a whiff.
Okay.
But the fact that he called our bet makes a whiff unlikely. There's no reason to call if he whiffed.
Right.
So I think we're up against a monster here now because of that.
Okay.
All right. Now, the oversized river bet is one of these second-level kind of things.
Right.
Which usually means a bluff, like, you know, hey, I'm gonna bet a lot here, and he's not going to be able to call, so I'm going to take it down. But I also think it can be a distraction bet intended to make us think he's bluffing and attempt to get us to call. And if I had a if I was the villain here and I had a monster, I couldn't check the river hoping for a check raise because, you know, you don't want to take that chance. So you got to get some money in, but a smallish bet will likely be called too. So I am trying to maximize the value of my monster here, and I think the best way to do it is a bluff screamer bet like this, and hopefully I'll get paid off. So I'm thinking we're up against king, queen, or ace, jack, or certainly something that's got us beat here. So that normally I would say fold right away, and now I just took a long, circuitous route to say fold this time.
Oh, man. All right, well, I'm going to keep it short and sweet. I say it's the Cosenza.
All right.
And we should know when we're in the presence of mediocrity that somehow finds a way to win all the time. So I'm going to fold, too.
All right. Well, say we're behind. So you didn't do it as much flair as I did.
No, but the other thing, too, is I want to get back to your big bet on the river thing.
Uh-huh.
And how many times now have we all said, even in a tournament, why so much, and you think it's a bluff, and then you call and they have the monster?
Exactly.
I mean, how many times has that happened now where everyone does it now because they think you're going to think they're bluffing? I think now it's made the turn where every time somebody bets like that, they do have the hand, and it's very rare that they don't anymore. It seems like that. So I'm thinking this guy does have the monster as well. I agree with you. So I don't think it's the whole bluff thing at the end, but we'll see, I guess. And I know our forum, everyone on the forum basically said fold too. So
yeah, we're all including one of them said what I said.
Yeah, yeah, we're all running like a girl. So
that's a bad thing.
All right, well, I guess we get to hear part two now.
Welcome back. When our opponent makes the turn call, I narrow his range and I am worried about ace king, king queen, and ace jack. I think I have the other hands beat. Now I have to determine if the hands that beat me are plausible for the way my opponent played his hand.
Yeah, I'm gonna need a couple minutes here, sir.
Assuming he flops top pair of the nuts, he checks and I check behind. Next, I think he bets with ace-jack or ace-king on the turn, rather than risk me checking behind with two clubs or a gut shot. So either he has king-queen, or he doesn't. On the river, he is now very sure I'm going to check behind if he checks, so he bets. Would he bring it in first to act for a raise with king-queen in early position?
You might, Travis, you might.
Well, would he call a re-raise with king-queen and then, after flopping the nuts, check and wait for me to hang myself? You know, in the end, I think he might. I can only beat a bluff, and I reluctantly fold. Tough, though. No hero call today. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you that sometimes you're just never gonna know for sure.
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Apes 5 is back and bigger than ever, Chris.
Yes!
Last year we devoted an entire show to it. This year we thought maybe we're too busy. That's crazy, because it is much bigger than it was last year. And last year was bigger than the year before. It's kind of like
it's like that pimple that never goes away. It just keeps coming back bigger and bigger.
Or that guy that's always taking up half the buffet when you're, I'm trying to get my crab legs. But then he comes back, he's a little bit bigger. Okay, so I put out a little thing on the forum trying to solicit some suggestions because, we're a caring folk here at Annie Up, right?
We do our best.
We want to know what the people want and do our best to try to make it happen.
We're like Florence Nightingale over a soldier. We're trying to just make them feel better about the pain they're in and do whatever we can to make them happy and feel better for the future.
Excellent. I like that.
Thank you.
So we took a lot of those suggestions, and I have to say, initially, some of them I looked at and I'm like, we just can't do that. But then I realized, no, we can't. There's some of the things we still can't do, but there are some things that we couldn't do because we were kind of slave to the formula that we put out for Apes, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? We don't need to follow that formula. If we can make this bigger and make it more enjoyable for more people, let's do it, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So that's kind of what we're doing here with Apes 5. And PokerStars has given us tentative approval for this. So the final schedule and details are subject to change. But I think, by and large, Stars is very happy with what we're putting out. And I'm hoping all of our listeners and readers and everybody in the nation will be happy as well.
Yeah, and again, if there are any tweaks to it, we'll update you on the show. But we generally think this is all going to pass, and we're excited about it.
All right, let's start off with the big news: the events. 24 paid events this year, Chris.
Wow, doubling our schedule.
That is twice as many as last year.
Wow.
The additional events we're going to use to introduce some new games, like a Pot Limit 5-card draw.
Awesome! You know, Fassel's playing that one.
Oh, absolutely. But the bulk of the new events will be no limit hold'em varieties. You know, here's the thing. We love on this show to encourage people to play new games, and that's kind of one of the impetus of Apes in the past, right? Was
right.
To get people to play them.
Yep.
But you also have to be realistic that, you know, a lot of players still just like no limit. So, you know, we scoured the schedule of PokerStars games and made sure that we had one for everything on there for the most part. And then we just included a bunch of no-limit events so folks can feel like they can play if they haven't quite yet learned to play those other events yet.
Yeah.
Here's a quick breakdown. We have 8 limit events, 12 no-limit events, 3 pot limit events. Both of the Omaha events this year are pot limit, Chris.
Oh, man. Pot limit 08.
Yeah, we had some folks talk about how the limit 08 wasn't quite as great. And trust me, after playing a long tournament in Biloxi, I much prefer the pot limit variation. So we're going to do a pot limit. And I also tweaked the schedule to be sure that those Omaha events are on the Saturday schedule, which we'll talk about a little bit more. So our Omaha fanatics over in Europe will be able to play in them.
Right.
3 draw events. We already mentioned the new pot limit 5-card draw. We are also adding Deuce to 7 triple draw this year, Chris.
Our favorite game.
We will try to make sure that all of our listeners gouge out not one of their eyes, but both of their eyes this year.
Well, there's 3 of them. Badoogie, too. So, I mean, it's Badoogie, triple draw, and 5-card draw. I think that we're going to find another, you know, organ to have to... Never mind. Let's move on.
The Heads Up and Rebuy No Limit Hold'em events return. You know, there's some concern about the Heads Up event that took too long, blah, blah, blah. But we've moved that to the Saturday schedule. And the Rebuy's back. So, you know, all those No Limit events are back, plus a couple new ones.
Yep.
And 3 mixed game events, Horse and the 8 game like we had last year. And we also introduced a Hose this year for those of you who just can't bring yourself to play Raz.
Blasphemy!
Yeah, it's blasphemy, but I'm quickly getting there myself. So, and I also scheduled them all at the end of the series. So we had a couple people saying, you know, hey, I kind of want to work up to these games and learn them before you put them all together. So come January, February next year, you're going to have your A game for all these games because that's when you're going to have to be able to switch between the disciplines very quickly.
Yep. All right, so let's move on to the schedule, too. Now we have, as you alluded to, we're going to have 2 events a month. One's going to be at 9 p.m. Eastern time on their usual Wednesday. And then the other one's going to return to our roots, and we're going to have it at noon Eastern time on Saturday. We used to do this. I think it was the first year, maybe, or the second year. But we used to have, especially the Omaha ones, on Saturday at noon. And then we had some on Thursday back then, but... It's a good way to get as many people involved as possible, and by doing 24 events, you know, 2 a month, you know, if you can't make the Saturday one because you're with your kids, you could probably make the Wednesday one, you know, because they're asleep. So we're trying to accommodate everyone here with this, and no limit games too will rotate between the 2 nights, right? So we're always gonna have at least a no limit game, I guess is how it's gonna work.
Yeah,
out, right?
Yeah. So half the no limit games are gonna be on Wednesday nights, and half will be on Saturday. So if you're a no limit player and you can only make it one night, you'll still have, you know, 6 shots at the game, you know, in love.
Very cool.
We're going to get this kicked off February 10th with Stud. It will be our first event this year. The free roll, of course, will be February 3rd, though. So hopefully, if the PokerStars developers get the schedule up and running, we will be looking to kick it off with a free roll on February 3rd.
Now, we need to talk about the free rolls, too, right? They're a little bit changed this year.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more detail about it later on, but we are including free rolls for all 24 events this year, so you've got a free shot to get in every single event that we're scheduling this year. So,
and it'll be 1 week before the event, not two, exactly, because of the way we have two a month, so it'll be the week before.
So if you think of that, four opportunities to play Apes every month.
Yep, pretty cool.
It's like you're going to have to divorce the wife because you're not going to have time.
Every week you'd be able to play an Apes event, really.
All right, and there's been considerable interest in adding a Tournament of Champions, Chris. And there's been a little makeshift one put up for this year. But we're going to make an official TOC event as part of this one. It's going to take place 1 week after the last event. It's going to be an 8-game mixed event. Open by invite only, Chris.
Yeah, you have to win an event to play in it, right? That's it.
Yep. It's going to be 24 players, or no more than 24 players. If you win a banana, you're in it. If you don't win a banana, you ain't. And that includes us. So if Scott and Chris want to make it in, Scott and Chris are going to have to actually play poker this year.
You got to win to get in.
And PokerStars graciously has put up a $500 winner-take-all prize for this event, Chris.
That's pretty bizarre.
That's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be on a Saturday afternoon, and an 8-game mixed, and 23 people leave with frowns on their face, and one guy can buy any up.
We should make it so that they can't make a deal either.
Yeah, that's true.
No deal.
Yes. We'll change the avatars for everyone so it has that big red thing through it. And then, of course, we'll mention, too, the expanded schedule means that you may not always see one or both of us in every single event. We will certainly try our best. But, you know, when you have to set up the schedule the entire year long, we just don't know what's going to happen. So, and that's kind of one of the problems with adding 24 events. But we will certainly try to be there as often as we can. But if we're not, feel free to bust our balls like we know you will. But understand that we're doing other things. So,
the buy-ins this year, every one is $5 plus 50 cents. Does that go true for the rebuy?
That's for the rebuy event, too. So what we want to do is make it a little more consistent. You know, we experimented with a $10 event and a $20 main event. And just to make things a little easier this year, I just made them all $5.50 this year.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that doesn't spell good for me because I only do well in the 20 plus $2 events. So,
well, here's the thing: what you could do, Chris, is give me $20.
Okay.
And I will buy you into Apes, and you will win. So it's a win-win for both of us.
Or I could just rebuy four times in a rebuy event, and maybe I'll cash them out.
That is true too. All right, I guess we got to talk about the free rolls, right?
Yeah.
I was going to try to avoid it here, but I guess I put it down in the notes. So, all right, so here's the thing. First off, we have to thank PokerStars for generously agreeing to putting up $1,500 for the second year in a row. An amazingly great gesture on their part. And we hope people respect that great offer.
Yeah.
So part of the reason for doing the $5.50 for our events is we are giving away 10 seats in each free roll. So if you play in any free roll, it's got 1,317 players, 10 of you will get a seat. If it has 11 people, 10 of you will get a seat. All right, and that will go for the free rolls will be for the following events. So like we said, the first event is on February 10th at Stud. The free roll will be February 3rd. That will also be Stud, just like last year.
Right.
And then the final important note here, we had a lot of suggestions on how we could fix the free rolls and make it so only Annie up people on. And, you know, in the end, it was just going to be too much work for a little payoff. You know, those folks that want to get in the free roll are going to find a way in. So here's what we're going to say. A free roll is that it is just that. It's a free tournament. You're welcome to play in them. You're welcome not to play in them. But they are there for you to take advantage of if you'd like. And that's all we're going to say about that.
Well done, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
I know how painful that was for you. Well done. You know, it's a free roll. We're giving you a chance to win a seat. And if you're not enjoying that free roll, then really just don't play them. It's only $5 to play. And that's what it's about anyway. It's about playing with our community and having fun and testing your skills against the other listeners. So, you know, well, so the password this year for all events is going to be Ante Up 2010. So that's Ante Up 2010, all one word. Hopefully it'll cut down on those free-roll guys, you know, who were doing it last year by just typing in Ante Up. You know, but I think once they figure it out, they'll probably, you know, they'll pass it on to everybody else, and they'll keep trying it every month. So, you know, ultimately, you know, all the ideas for changing the passwords and how to answer it, just again, it just was too hard, and it wasn't worth the effort. And I don't even know if they could have done it the way we needed to. And so, and we can't just limit it to the show only. You know what I mean? It's for our listeners and readers as well. So if we put the password on the show, you know what I mean? It might not have worked out. You know, we have readers who are playing now too. So. And they may not be listening to the show. So that's what it's going to be, Ante Up 2010.
Sounds good. All right, and the last couple things. You know, we always end with a main event. We kind of got rid of that this year because we're kind of thinking of the Tournament of Champions.
Right.
Will be kind of the main event. You know, obviously there might be some questions out there. I mean, we're still going to be doing the Player of the Year point totals, and we want to thank again Gambit for being the official scorekeeper of Ante Up. So we'll continue to do that. So, the Player of the Year will be the one with the points that will make it on the show, like Poker Geek MN will be on pretty soon to talk about it. So we'll continue to do that. But, you know, if you think the 24 events are too daunting and makes it tough for you to become Player of the Year, then that's kind of one of the beauties of having the Tournament Champions. I mean, if you play just one event during the year and you win, boom, you're in the Tournament Champions.
Yeah, absolutely.
So two ways of looking at it.
All right, so we hope we made a lot of people happy with the schedule. You know, we always try to adjust it, and this year it was pretty daunting how many changes you made, and I think it came together nicely, and I think we got a really good variety and a chance for everyone to play, whether you live in Tokyo or you live in, you know, Solvang, California.
And we'll get the schedule up on our website at anyupmagazine.com as soon as it's entered in the PokerStars computer. So look forward pretty soon there. But for right now, mark off February 3rd. We'll see you there.
Welcome to the Ante Up PokerCast. I'm Mike DeMouth Mattiso, author of my new book, Check Raising the Devil.
This week's Hand of the Week, Chris, comes from Galen Kantz, Oklahoma City, I believe.
Wow, man, we're I love when we hear all these cool cities and stuff, you know.
It's home of the Thunder, right?
Yeah, home of the Thunder.
The name of the basketball team there?
Yep.
Yeah. It's from a $1, $2 live No Limit Hold'em game at Fire Lake Grand Casino in Shawnee, Oklahoma.
You ever played there?
No, I have not.
Me neither.
Like, you know, I don't know if I've been to Oklahoma.
I probably drove through it,
you know, with the Wings rustling the... What's that song that I don't know?
I have no idea.
Probably even brought the reference up.
I really don't know what you're talking about. But I love the name of the casino. It's an awesome name.
Fire Lake Grand. No, I wonder, because, you know, usually lakes that catch on fire are more like in the Northeast.
That's usually because the mafia has thrown some flaming deadbeat into the water, though.
Okay. All right. All right. So Galen says he's been playing for a couple hours. He bought in for 140. He's run up to 250. Very good, Galen. I have never been able to do that.
See, his name isn't Galen Kantz. It's Galen Can.
Yeah, that's right. Since the table's been fairly stable since it opened, not many changes to make up. Play has been typical. One or two moderately loose players, a couple tight players. Hey, I was there.
Hey, you were there.
And the rest are in between. And Galen says he's got a tight image. And here comes the hand, Chris. Under the gun folds. Under the gun plus one limps in for $2. Under the gun plus two raises to seven. And then we got the cutoff calls. And on the button, our hero looks down at six of spades, seven of clubs.
Jeez.
And he says the razor and two callers have deep stacks, all with 300 plus.
Jeez. Wow. I mean, man, this dog won't bite. I mean, that is a dog of a hand. I mean, if they're at least suited, maybe I'd like to screw around with it. But, you know, even the under the gun plus one limper, you don't know what that guy's got. I mean, if he can open the betting up again and you're calling off $7 with 6-7 offsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, I know. If you're Dan Negreanu, you're playing his hand, then you're making mincemeat of the competition. But I'm not Dan Negreanu, so I can't play this hand for $7. I know I got position, but it's got to be a little better than that, I think. It's got to be a little better than that. I mean, it's got to at least be suited. Suited, I'd be like, all right, let's try it. But 6-7 off, all I'm trying to hit are a baby two pair or a straight. Yeah, man. I think I'm folding here, but obviously I can't do that, so.
Yeah, well, it's tough not knowing exactly more. I mean, he's given us good details about the table, but not exactly knowing. And you make a very good point. We don't want to put more than $7 on this pot pre-flop.
Right.
And we got the two blinds behind us and then that early position limper. If we've been at the table long enough that we know that, one raise is usually the norm, and then maybe we take a stab. And usually at tables like that, you're going to get the blinds are going to come along too. So now you've got a lot of money in there, and if you hit big. But if we don't know that, and it's a table that plays more traditionally, with a raise somewhere, then I think you're right. I don't want to go to war with this hand.
Well, the other thing too to take into consideration, if what he said was correct, if he has $250 in front of him and he got that $250 with a tight image, they're going to look at his call as very awkward, because if you're a tight player, you're not entering a pot unless you have a good hand, and if you have a good hand, you're not entering it for a call with all these people. You want to raise and minimize the field, so. By him not minimizing the field, I think that it's going to send up flags to these guys that he can't have a good hand. So I don't know. It just doesn't fit into his normal makeup, what he's presented to us as, I've doubled my buy-in almost by having a tight image. So by limping or by calling that raise, that's it. It doesn't seem to me that he's going to have a quality hand here, so I wouldn't respect it as another player. And I might even just re-raise if I had the opportunity, if I was in the blind. So I just want to get away from this hand and continue with my tight image.
Okay. As it turns out, both the blinds and the original limper call. So, of course, our hero called, too, I should say.
Yeah, of course.
Probably the most important part of the story, right?
So then he sat out and watched the rest of the hand, yes. And here's how it went.
And he detailed it with remarkable recall. All right, so... everybody's going to the flop, so I guess what we said is that if you could guarantee that wasn't going to get re-raised, then maybe take a shot. So that's what happened. So pot is about $45. The flop comes Jack of Spades, Five of Clubs, Four of Spades.
Gee, how could I tell that what the flop was going to be?
Open-ended.
Yeah. Well. I mean, you got to see. I mean, obviously, it's what you're hoping for. You actually were hoping for two pair, really. But, your hand's going to be disguised if the three comes or an eight comes. So that's ideal. The problem is, though, is if you got somebody who's, raised under the gun plus two to $7, he might already have queens, and you're going to have to pay a huge amount of money to see another card. You have the pot odds right now to see that flop if this guy makes a smaller bet. But if he makes any kind of pot size bet, you just aren't getting the right odds. So that's the problem with playing 6-7. You really wanted to have it suited, and you really wanted to probably hit two pair rather than a draw. So hopefully that these guys aren't going to bet too much that we can try to catch our hand.
Very good analysis, partner.
Thanks, bud.
All right, here's the thing. It checks around to us.
Huh. I'm
somewhat
totally happy checking,
surprise.
Man. I am totally happy checking here.
Yeah, I mean, that could be the best case scenario, right?
Yeah, I would love to check here. Especially on last to act, so I know there's no more betting.
That's right.
Hey, I'm checking.
All right, so our hero does say he doesn't want to risk getting raised off a solid draw, so he checks as well, too. The turn card comes, Eight of Clubs.
Bingo, bango, bongo.
For now, Jack of Spades, Five of Clubs, Four of Spades, Eight of Clubs, Stone Cold Nuts.
Stone Cold Nuts.
And our hero says, bingo. And the fireworks begin. So I hope you're sitting down, Chris.
Oh, man, this is going to be
wild. I don't know what he means by this, but we'll find out.
All right.
Small blind checks. Big blind bets $25.
Huh.
It's getting better.
Huh.
Folds to the cutoff, which means that the preflop razor's out of the way.
Uh-huh.
Cutoff smooth calls. Again, not just calls, smooth calls. And now it's on us.
Wow. Well, I think the pot is big enough now, and I think that we probably would like to get one person out of this hand. I don't know if we want to go three-handed because somebody could have two pair and the board could pair, or somebody could have a set and the board could pair, or somebody could have the flush draw.
There's two flush draws, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. There's two spades. So now, you know, that's what we – I think we want to try to get out that guy who took a stab maybe and maybe come over the top like five times that bet. So, and I only have – I have 250. I put in seven. So I have a lot of money left. I can bet – I could probably bet like $100 here and maybe 110 or so. And really make them want to see the next card. And if they have a better hand than they think and they shove, I'm happy to shove with them absolute stone-cold nuts. So I'm not just calling here. It's too risky to call with all those draws. There's so many draws out there. Even 9-10, you know, 9-10 of spades, something like that, you know, or 9-10 right. of clubs that got their flush draw now, you know, because you can easily have that in the blinds. If we're playing 6-7 off, somebody could have 9-10 in that blind, that big blind, so... let's pump it, baby. Pump it, pump it.
Yeah, and I think we need to pump it pretty big here because, like you said, there are numerous draws out there. And while we got the nuts now, you know, I'd rather not let somebody see it cheap. You know, if they re-raise me and we get it all in, that's one thing.
Yeah, I don't feel like this is a place to get cute. I think we need to pump it to like 110, 125, something like that.
All right, our hero raises. He says $100 in the pot now. He raises to 75. Not enough, right?
I don't think that's enough. Doesn't feel like it's enough. And if he – obviously it has to, it can't be enough because we have a hand of the week here and we're going to see a river. So I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough to at least get heads up with someone who may have two pair and think their hand's good. So I would have to bet more than that. But we'll see what happens, I guess.
All right. The small blind tanks for a moment and then calls.
The small blind or was it the big blind?
He said small blind.
He's a small blind. Okay.
I guess the small blind must have checked, remember.
I
guess
yeah. I thought it was the big blind.
Checks.
Okay, yeah.
And calls. Back to the big blind, who looks disgusted, announces he missed a bet on the flop with a call or a raise, a call or one left to act. He has no choice but to muck. So we got one out.
Okay.
But we picked up one that we didn't know we were going to have. Cutoff calls the extra 50 with little hesitation.
Huh.
All right, I'm putting the cutoff on one of those draws.
Yeah.
And it's impossible to say with the small blind. I guess small blind could have a draw too, just hoping to get there cheap.
Yeah, or you could have a small two pair and hoping to get there cheap for that too, thinking that it might still be good, but he can't lay a two pair hand down, hoping to catch one of his six outs on the end there.
All right, the pot is now about $300.
Man,
two flush draws out there. I pray for a red card, he says, Chris. And preferably one that doesn't pair the board. It sounds like, you know, if you're going to pray, you might as well just pray for everything, right?
Yeah, just pray for a big old dog brick that hits.
River card is the ace of diamonds. So our final card is jack of spades, five of clubs, four of spades, eight of clubs, ace of diamonds.
Wow. That's the perfect card.
Couldn't ask for a better card.
That is the perfect card. It doesn't complete any draw except for a wheel. I can't imagine somebody has 2-3 here. Maybe, well, I guess it's not perfect then if somebody has 2-3, but it is perfect.
Yeah, probably overstated.
Yeah.
But,
well, 2-3 is perfect too because then we have a better straight than them. So
that's true.
It's absolutely the perfect card. It's absolutely the perfect card. So, man, you couldn't ask for more, man. I think Galen's just sending it in the gloat that he has the perfect hand to play. That's what I think. I think once you get past that initial call of the raise, now he's he's got the perfect hand, so... okay, so what happens? Right. What do they do?
Small blind checks.
Okay.
The cutoff bets, get this, Chris, $21 into the $300 pot, and he leaves 300 behind for bus fare.
300 behind. Wow.
All right, so it's on us now. We got the stone cold nuts, obviously. It doesn't mean that we're not chopping, which is what Galen says he's a little worried about. But, you know, that's if that's the only thing we're worried about, I can live with it.
Yeah, I mean, you've already made the maximum in the rake, so
exactly.
You don't have to worry about losing any more to the rake. So, you know, the guy who checked missed his draw, I think. So I don't have to worry about trying to get more money out of him. I don't think that's going to happen. So, now, if I remember correctly, then after you bet 75, so he's probably still got about 170, 160 left or so. So, I mean, I if the guy bet 21, I have no problem raising him to like 80, trying to get some more out of him.
That sounds like a good bet, actually.
Yeah, I'm not going to shove. I mean, that's just stupid. So, I mean, unless it's the, you know, unless it's the Columbo hand and we're at the end and we're trying to make it like we're bluffing because we missed our draw. So you could try that too, I guess. But because that $21 bet sounds defensive to me. Doesn't feel like it's trying to get more money out of us. So, you know, a shove might work here, but if it's defensive, he's not going to call. So I would just give him a little boost here of like $80.
All right. Now, his thought process, he said that he knew if he called, he would probably get the small blind, but he definitely wants to get more than $21 out of this pot.
Yeah.
So he eventually settles on a raise to 75.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Perfect. All right, the small blind tanks. Has a little more than 100 behind, but calls.
Huh, two pairs. That's
kind of interesting. Gets back to the cutoff, who tanks himself and eventually calls the extra 54 himself.
Wow, sounds like a bunch of two pairs.
Yeah, so we got a nice $525 pot here. We turn over our nut straight. Small blind turns over. Jack.
Oh, a set. Top set.
Well, until
start.
The river.
Yeah, to start. Oh, my God.
Cutoff turns over 8 of diamonds, 8 of hearts.
Oh, turn set. Oh, man. Brutal. And
of course, we scoop it all. He says the original raiser mentioned that he had ace king.
Yeah.
And the big blind says he had flopped top two with jack five suited.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Wow, the case jack. Oh, man. That is the perfect hand. Man, you know what? We are not sending him anything for hand of the week. He's already experienced perfection. Why does he need a $10 staking package from getastake.com? I don't think he needs it.
Well, I would love to have this small blind in my game all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he was hoping somebody was going to bet for him on that flop, but I flop top set, and there's two coordinated cards and two suited cards on there. You know, I'm betting it. Let's bet my hand.
Man, that's how the hand of the week should have been sent in by the jacks, so we could have annihilated that guy's play because it was terrible.
And then particularly, and then the turn comes, and, you know, other than completing, obviously, our straight, the small blind checks again.
Yeah,
he's
going to
let
anything.
All those draws go.
Was my dad actually playing in Oklahoma? Because that's how he plays, man. He just wants you to do the betting for you and, you know, and not do anything too aggressive. So, wow, that's pretty impressive that this guy could sit on it that long and lose that much money with it.
All right, let me ask you this, too. The our other opponent that had the eights, when the turn comes, he gets his set.
His set,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just calls the $25 bet. Would you have raised there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because now that's another draw on there.
Right.
And I want to get some information, too. I want to know who's serious about this hand. You know, if I can put them on, like, a two-pair hand, and the board doesn't pair later to give them a better, you know, if it was, like, a four on the end to give them a smaller full house, because I would have had eights over fours, you know, I would have... You know, I would have gotten a lot more chips out of somebody there. So to just call there is crazy. Because what are you hoping to get by calling? You're letting someone catch up. You know, what if somebody had pocket sevens and a six comes? You know, or they had ace king of clubs or spades. You know, it's crazy. All these calls that these guys are making, they're so passive. Man, it's no wonder he built his bankroll up so high because these people are just so passive.
Well, exactly. And Galen, we appreciate the hand. And you know what? We're still going to give you something. because you demonstrated that you could play 6-7 offsuit with an amazing amount of skill. So we'd like you to run it up online with a $10 staking package from getastake.com. And if any of you else have the hand of the week, email it to podcast@magazine.com. And we'll break it down. We'll break down some with our Mike. Hopefully, we'll get Mike next week to break down a hand. And Poker Geek's going to be doing a hand probably for us. And then Lee Child someday.
He's going to come back someday.
We'll get a yak on the show. I was texting him last night, so he's having fun out in Biloxi, and he wants to get back on the show. Just haven't made it work. So, but when he's back on, he'll break down some hands.
Man, we got some serious breakdownage coming up soon. So, man, who else is going to give you Mike Mattisau, Player of the Year, and Circuit Winner, breaking down hands for you? Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Sure.
Okay. Just don't say all right.
I only do that about 12 times a show.
Go ahead.
I'm checking myself into a Mississippi all right rehab clinic next week. Hanging out with Tiger.
I got to remember to put this at the end of the show because I haven't had any Easter eggs in a while.
All right. You ready?
You bastard.